Wusstest du schon, dass du bei Trivago bis zu 100 Euro pro Nacht bei deinem Hotel sparen kannst? Ganz genau. Geh einfach auf trivago.de, vergleiche Preise von hunderten Seiten auf einen Blick und finde das passende Angebot für dich. Hotel? Trivago.
All right, let's see here. All right. This is just some warm-up music. Get you guys nice and warm. You warm yet? All right, let's get this started then, finally, right? Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Harmontown is now in session. Please help me in welcoming your mayor to the Harmontown stage, Dan Harmon.
Thank you. Is this the right mic to be using? All right. Welcome to our XOXO in Portland, which is a festival about technological innovation. We are into our third technological innovation. I don't know which mic I'm supposed to be on, and I don't know what happened with your iPad.
I don't think anyone cares.
We're innovating. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
I got two mics up here.
There's warehouses full of homemade video games by a bunch of hippies and anarchists. It's about independent thought and not having that be automatically synonymous with growing your own basil. You can also have a computer involved and think independently, which I think is a very important thing.
You can automate your basil garden via laptop.
Oh, now you're making me miss Minecraft. Spencer and I are both headlong into a Minecraft addiction that I don't think either of us has acknowledged is like an actual movie of the week heroin type of addiction.
It's really like I've done a lot of things obsessively and compulsively in my life, but Minecraft, Jesus Christ, it's like masturbating with heroin or something.
Like coating your hand in heroin.
That's how you do it, right?
Rubbing it on your penis.
Yeah.
And like, but your penis is a special heroin penis that has heroin receptacles on it.
Well, it's like, my hand is made of syringes. Is how it works.
Well, see, I was thinking about that, but that turns you off.
Well, it turns me on.
Well, maybe they're like, there's syringes, but the needles are like those rubber, like, kind of like dog toy little sea anemone things.
Like,
they just make it grip and... I was trying to get away from the Freddy Krueger...
I mean, I thought that was more pleasant than whatever you were just describing, to be honest.
Well, yeah, any description of anything pointy going near your penis, it's on me for going deep. Anyways, hello, Portland. We are good to meet you.
Yeah.
This is my second time at XOXO, different stage. I wasn't here last year. I was busy, probably being fired or something. But I love Portland, and I love XOXO. I think XOXO might be the first time I was at Portland. It was the first one 2 years ago, and now it's exploded, as we hoped it might. And we're here in a, I think you would call it a steel mill. I don't know technically what it is.
Does anyone know what this building was used for?
A metal stamping factory.
That's awesome.
I don't know if factory is the word, but it's a big grown-up building. It's a building for pre-war.
Where real things got done.
Yeah, where our mythical ghosts of our dads worked. There's boots in the back. There's shelves that are only there to hold stuff with no thought lent to aesthetic. Therefore, now it's hip. We have a blue collar chic. We're in a vast canyon. If anyone here is over 40, you're in this place, and maybe you have all kinds of different connotations. But all I can think about is Jennifer Beals.
What? You're gonna have to explain that to me.
Well, yeah, you're 20. You're 12 years old. What are you?
I'm 13in December.
13 in life, you got it. 13 in life, you go. Your crime is time, and you just got your baby teeth out. There was a movie called Flashdance, and I actually haven't seen it, but most people my age saw it, but it was like in the water, like fluoride. Like we all know that there was a movie called Flashdance. If you're my age, then you know there was this movie called Flashdance, and you know that in that movie, a woman is a dancer and a welder, and you know that she dances and then pulls a chain and then water pulls down, splashes down her. And you know there's a steel mill involved. You know that roughly the same things about Footloose.
Does she weld while dancing?
The steel mill became big in the 80s. It was like a big, it was a place you went to dance at the steel mill. Until RoboCop finally put a cork in that and said, no, this is a place you go to fucking learn to be a robot again. I gotta recalibrate my baby food shooters. How are your baby food shooters, by the way?
Was that a euphemism?
Yeah, for your heroin dick. With its dog toy spines.
It's, you know, full of holes.
But good ones, in a good way.
Heroin. Well, they're track marks, really.
They got Oculus Rifts here. I didn't go to the arcade yet. They got an independent arcade here. They make independent games, which are always so awesome because it's like back to the basics.
Do they take quarters?
No, not like that. That's the bad
so
part of
the old
days.
Even more indie than quarters.
Yeah.
The most indie of all change.
Like the idea, you know, as we progress as a society, we find new ways to make computers think more things faster, and all too often we then funnel that all into graphics cards and go like, how can I keep this? You know, okay, the fan can cool off this much processor for this amount of time. So how many angles, how many triangles can we generate?
Are you talking about Minecraft again?
Indirectly, I am, yes, because I think the other way is to go like, okay, no, computers can do more now, so let's, like, actually, if it looks like Pac-Man, you could have Pac-Man do more shit. Like, he could eat way more than a key. We thought that was the most Pac-Man could ever eat, was a key.
I never got past cherries, if I'm honest.
Yeah, you gotta get to the key, bro.
Jeez. What level is that? I don't know.
What were you gonna
say? What level is the key on?
That's like the maximum level. You can't eat anything past a key. And it makes sense, because why would you?
That's words to live by right there. You can't eat a key.
All right, so here we are in Portland, where my fiance and I keep thinking we want to move to, and I keep... I imagine that there was a... Okay, there was... You heard that. A couple people said
move.
Yeah,
a lot of people aren't into the idea.
Exactly. I think there's a lot of people probably going, don't move to Portland, you fucking asshole. Not because of me, but just because everyone stopped moving to Portland, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know how
you guys feel about that. Do you want everyone to move to Portland? Some people do. That's weird.
Only some, though. I mean,
maybe they're new. All the people in the front.
Yeah, we don't know.
Don't move to Portland. And all the people that moved to Portland, they're in the back because they just got here.
Everyone else hates us. Come here. It's a good time.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm also fascinated with the overcast weather thing because people in Portland are so apologetic for it, and people from LA, they go, no, you don't understand. I don't care. I hate the sun. The sun is
you want to kick it in the sun balls.
Yeah. I said that earlier on the sidewalk.
I
came to Portland. I was looking forward to hiding from this fucking yellow maniac, this fucking orange Hitler, this spherical fucking Ayatollah, like lording over everything, demanding everything of you, reflecting everything. And I think in Portland, I feel like their sidewalks are more reflective because they miss the sun so much that they're like, it'll be here one day, and when it's here, there'll be a parade. But like, you come from LA and you're like, why are you trying to simulate the fucking godless desert that I came here from? I want the gray skies and the shade and the dark boozy cloisters and the independent video games, the yogurt. No, there's no yogurt.
Yeah, is there no?
They don't like yogurt here. I might have got them mixed up with Seattle. I don't know.
Home of the yogurt.
Someone told me backstage that they like yogurt. Here's
guy here likes yogurt.
Here's something else a guy told me backstage. This is a little weird, and I don't want this guy to kill himself with me telling this story. But
We admire him in some ways.
This guy is fine. He should not be ashamed of himself. But he should also understand that, as I think he understood when he did this, he is the first person that has ever done this. And I thought it was notable. I was in the back, hunched over a cooler, getting my contractually required bottle of Kettle One out of a few bags of ice. And you know, there's five people run back there, and it's goodbye evening. But I was pouring a drink, and this guy came back, and he... I'll do an impression of him, and I... Please, sir, wherever you are, don't feel bad about yourself, but I have to share this.
It's just interesting.
You
it's
did
interesting.
This to me. I get to do it to everyone. I get to turn it into something.
You're part of something now.
A guy, he came up and he said, Dan Harmon? And I said, yes. And he said, look, he said something very quickly along the lines of, like, you know, my friends told me not to do this, and I thought maybe I shouldn't do it, but here we go. And he... And I was like, oh my God, this is how John Lennon died. But he pulled out a phone, and I was like, oh, he wants a picture. I'm a very handsome person. I approve of this. But then he opened the phone, and then he just opened it up, and he went like... I'm gonna make this up because I think this kind of person like values the intellectual property he was reading, so I'll make a new thing up. But he's like, Alan Alda plays a Midwestern man who is transported to a different dimension. And he just rattled off. He just read a pitch off of his phone. He just read it off of his phone.
That's so much guts, though. I could never do anything close to that.
Why? Because of your conscience?
Yeah,
what,
yeah.
What horrible wall is between you and that brave act? Empathy!
I mean,
empathy! Empathy! Empathy is what stands... It is not a wall! It is an invitation! Empathy!
It's not a wall?
It's not a wall that keeps you from being a sociopath. It's not like video games where there's a thing you can't do, so you just fucking try to do it. The walls in society are there sometimes because...
Very brave, though. Very brave.
Very brave. Inarguably brave.
Yeah. Murder.
Yes, no one denies that.
Murder's
here are some
brave.
Other brave people throughout society.
Hitler.
Abe Lincoln. Hitler. John Wayne Gacy. Jeffrey Dahmer.
Taylor Swift.
Taylor Swift. Kanye West. Kanye West running up and saying, Taylor Swift, give me that microphone. Fuck you.
It was brave.
And
yeah.
Yes, bravery is an amoral descriptor.
Agreed, certainly.
It has nothing to do with good or bad. There are brave Ted Bundys. There are brave George Washingtons. There are brave Japanese senators. There are brave Ku Klux Klan dragons. It is brave to fuck with people.
It is. Like, yeah. It's terrible, but brave. It's an interesting
I meet
dichotomy.
Some brave people. So did John Lennon. John Lennon went out meeting one of the bravest people he will ever meet. So, forgive me for not putting... A high value on bravery.
I'm not putting a high value on it.
In my old age,
notable.
As I travel the country, I start to put something like, you know, tact higher than bravery. That's me. That's my self-interest. I'm like, oh, that's a tactful man. I appreciate him more. Maybe I'll conflagrate them and go like, you know.
What?
That, it's brave to be that tactful.
Tact is brave. No, it's not.
Tact can be brave in a tactless
tact
society.
Tact is very cowardly, I think. I mean, not that I'm very tactful, and I'm a huge coward.
I don't know how brave tact is, or how cowardly. That's a huge question. I don't think I have a right to say this about myself, but I, just as a shortcut, a autistic type. And a lot of my fans are like
spectrumatic.
Aspergatastic.
Aspergistas.
And I love them. And you yourself.
Yeah.
Spencer is my dungeon master, chauffeur, and personal assistant. And he picks me up in the morning, and I get into your Subaru, and we can drive for a half hour and not talk to each other.
Yeah.
Sometimes you play your podcast of those guys that play those Nintendo songs.
And then argue about what genre they are and stuff.
And those, yeah, I'm just listening to 16-bit music from Spencer's youth. It's like, and then sometimes we'll listen to a podcast about, how
dolphins.
Bridges are made or dolphins. And then sometimes we'll talk about Minecraft. But we don't have to do anything. I don't have to look at you. We don't have to look at each other. We'll never get mad at each other. You'll never, like, slam a door, and I'll be like, baby, what's up?
It's been a long time since you said you appreciated me.
That is a luxury we have as Vulcans. Then there's these handicaps when we deal with other people. They go, like, sometimes they slam doors, and we go, what's going on? I don't understand. Well, it's been a long time since you said you appreciated me. Well, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Also, just close the door and be mad.
Yes. Can't you just stop feeling things?
Yeah.
Isn't it on you? The thing that's making you cry. Unplug it. Why is the solution to make me, like, fucking more that when I'm still able to saw wood while ignoring your feelings? What if aliens attack and they go, quick, get them, they're all crying.
You'll be the only survivor, Dan.
Well, they will turn to us and they will go, Asperger people, help us. There are worm men from the moon attacking us.
And we'll laugh at them.
Yes.
And they'll perish.
Yes. And then they'll go, yeah, you're laughing. You're human. And then we'll die. What was my point? I was saying, like, I'm used to these interactions and I value them. I like people who can't make eye contact with me. I like people who want to have honest conversations and sincere ones and get down to the nitty gritty. But there is a cowardly version of tactlessness. There's the I don't make small talk version, and then there's the actually I do. I am gonna say what's easy. I am gonna just like barf up some weird shit. Because I think that it's like some kind of weird strategic way to put you off kilter. And, you know, make you vulnerable. And you can see that technique being employed, and you're like, what are you trying to do? Why are you... So you think that saying, hello, I like you, is like something weak people do, so you're going to say, you're going to insult me, or, you know, put me off, and I'm going to, like, hang a, you know, a Star Wars medal around your neck and go, like, you're the first person that ever, like, barfed shit on me in an elevator.
People aren't, right? Like, that happens a lot.
To people who...
Well,
like,
to you. Like, people are like, oh, I'm sure everyone does this, so I'm going to... But then all of those people are doing that exact same thing.
Yes. I mean, I would put a big asterisk on that and say that anyone that likes me is better than other people. Like... I, by and large, like, because by the time you make it over those walls...
See, that's weird.
Like, you are a Marine of like, you are a better person. So even my worst fan, I think, would beat, you know, Kevin Smith's best fan in a...
In a fan-off?
I don't know, just in a general, like, I feel like... And I hope that gauntlet doesn't get too thrown down. That's the last thing I need.
Well, that's weird because, you know, if someone likes me, I'm a self-hating individual. If someone likes me, I instantly hate them. Like, I don't trust them. It's like, why...
Yeah, they need to earn your trust. If they like you, they need to earn your trust.
Well, because it's like, what are you looking at? I mean, it's just a big fat guy, right? Do I have gold in my ear or something?
Do I have gold in my ear?
I usually do. That's the thing.
Do you usually do?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big problem in my life. People are always trying to get out the gold in my ear, and they're gold diggers.
Guest comptroller Spencer Crittenden, everybody.
Thank you.
How many, there's no right or wrong answer. How many people are, I know you're all, registered with XOXO so you could be in this room, but how many of you in addition to that are fans of Harmontown, the podcast?
Hey, that's
Oh, not
nice.
That many, actually. All right, well, we should really be more on our game than we have been the last half hour. I apologize. I thought I was most of these people are like, when's he going to talk about Pascal programming? I'm sorry. I'm not going to. When's he going to talk about any kind of innovation in any sort of medium? I want to meet somebody from Portland. I don't know if there's any of those people here, but I think we have to be more specific than that. We want to reward. Usually at Harmontown, what we do is we bring up people who have traveled the farthest, but that would be kind of pointless here because we've traveled. So I want to meet a Portland person. And but how do you pick the right Portland person to talk to? What? Whoever's closest to this geographic point, all right, we invert the whole thing. Okay, who lives the closest to this abandoned steel mill? We have some hands here. I'm going to vet you. I have no way of proving it, but what's your name?
Stephanie. I live at 18th and Morrison, so I'm about 10 blocks away.
18th and Morrison, 10 blocks away.
Who can be?
I got 10 blocks away. 10 blocks away. I got 10 blocks. 18th and Morrison. Pink hair. Lady in the pink hair. How close do you live?
6th and Cooch.
6th and Cooch. I got 6th and Cooch here. Sounds disgusting, but also intimately close. 6th and Cooch. I got 6th and Cooch here. Anybody close to the 6th and Cooch? I got a friend with blue hair pointing at just randomly. Oh, pointing. Okay. All right. Coming over there. 6th and Cooch. 6th and Cooch. Sounds closer than 18th and Morrison for no reason. For all I know, we're on 17th and Morrison. All right. Purple hair. Where do you live?
13th and Salmon.
13th Whoa. And Salmon. All right. I'll take your word for it. Sounds familiar. I think the word salmon, I think we're on salmon or something.
Yeah.
All right. What's your name, young lady? McKenna, are you willing to come up and talk to us? We don't pick on people. It's not like I'm not like Jim Norton or... Okay. Also, I already forgot your name because I get nervous.
McKenna.
McKenna. That's your first name?
Yeah.
Okay, kind of weird. Most people use it as their last name.
Let's
fine.
Let's give a round of applause to McKenna, everybody.
You can take that mic and have a seat. Are you allowed to drink?
Yeah.
Do you want to drink?
I'm not drunk enough right now.
are you 21?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want a vodka? That's all we have.
That would be amazing.
All right, so we have a basin of molten steel in the back too.
Okay.
I can make you iron pants. Hey Elizabeth, can you make McKenna a drink? Elizabeth is our drink maker for the evening.
Thank you.
She also happens to be dating our producer, Dustin Marshall, but I swear to God, you can get this job just by working hard. it's an egalitarian meritocracy.
Definitely.
At Harmontown. There's absolutely no reason why you couldn't absolutely replace her.
No foam head on that. All foamless.
If you talk to her after the show, you know, within your conversation, feel her out for weaknesses. See if you can figure out a way to get in there.
This is my ultimate weakness happening at the moment.
What is it?
So, what is that?
Being in front of a ton of people.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Same here.
No, I hate it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you'll get used to it. You have to just, like, I don't know, picture them in your underwear.
Okay.
And then they're like uncomfortable because they're like, these haven't been washed in ever. Like,
well, that's mean. She probably washes her underwear. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Picture them in my underwear. I mean,
yeah.
So, McKenna. It's going to take me a while to get used to that.
Yeah. One of your best friends is called McKenna.
I know. That's why. It's like, McKenna! Like I want you to like take a bullet for me. I don't want to treat
I'll
you nice.
It. We'll see how this conversation goes.
Okay. All right, so McKenna, so what do you think of those people over on Cooch? seem kind of entitled.
Yeah.
I'm closer Cooch. Than Morrison. Everybody pay attention to me.
At least the worst is when people say couch, though.
Oh.
That's how you, like, know they're...
Is it spelled couch?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's... It's the New York...
I've never seen the sign.
It's the New York Houston trap. Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Houston?
Houston, and then if you don't say Houston, then you know,
Houston.
Fuck this guy. Kick him out of New York.
Yeah.
His crystal on his palm starts blinking. Houston! They take you up and they drop you into the Statue of Liberty's torch. Same with Edinburgh, Scotland. Edinburgh.
You say it like butter. You go Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. Anyways, McKenna. So, how long have you lived in Portland?
Around 11 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, since you were 3.
Yeah.
So you moved here from where?
I'm from Oregon.
Right.
So
you're still in Oregon.
An hour south of here.
All right. Oh, so you're like me in Wisconsin. You were born in a vat in the suburbs, kind of like somewhere in a basement.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
Your parents hit you
in
with a belt and then sent you. You like moved to the city.
Yeah.
All right. And said, I'm gonna show all of you. Madison, the guy just yelled out. Yes, that is a city in Wisconsin. I think that's the guy that read me the pitch on the. I can't tell. I don't think so. It's bright. Their lights are bright, but. I mean, you haven't lived until, and then he's just reciting it, and then he was like, "Hey, well, I figured, what the hell?" And I'm like, "Yeah, what could it hurt you?" To read me a pitch.
I don't have a pitch for you.
Thank you. So. There's going to be a gunshot from the back and my career is going to be over. For the dumbest reason in the world.
Not because you're dead, though, right?
No, because he...
Because the other guy is.
Because the other guy.
All right. Yeah. Trying to keep track here.
Have you ever listened to this podcast?
I have.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So my fiance and I have been to Portland now probably like, I think between us 5 times. The last time it got pretty severe, the Portland, thing, like where it gets in
like
your blood.
Like you're into it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like.
It happens.
We want to move here. So I can't get a read on the Portland people because usually the next thing that happens when you want to move to a city is you talk to somebody and they say, everyone feels that way. Fuck off. The reason
it's
you
true.
Feel that way is because nobody's moving here.
But you're a good example because a lot of people come here like now in the summertime and they're like, Portland's amazing. And then they actually move here and it's like 10 months of shit.
Right. When you guys say shit, you mean my favorite thing in the world, which is Blade Runner weather.
Obviously, I haven't left. Yeah. Yeah.
Every day is Blade Runner. I don't want to walk around in a fucking awesome trench coat. And
I think the shitty weather like creates cooler people, kind of. Like, you know, you go to somewhere sunny and people are all right. But you come here and everybody's like maybe a little angsty, but creative and making things.
Well, the sun is, I mean, the thing is when you go to a restaurant, there could be a culture where people say to you, you know, the best place to sit is right by the kitchen, the source of all restaurant things. That's where all the food is made. That's what the sun is. You don't want to sit near the kitchen. It's also where, like, shit. It's a fucking fusion reactor in the sky. It's giving you cancer. It's like it's burning your children. It hurts magnificent characters like Powder. Remember that guy? That guy's the best our planet can do. Like, and he doesn't want the sun. You know who Powder is?
He didn't ask for it.
Yeah, he has psychic powers, and he's not... Yes, the sun technically, like the kitchen in a restaurant, it makes things happen. Yes, that's where the shrimp goes into the basket. I don't want the booth next to the fucking kitchen. I want to be in the dark corner. Like, I want to be an indirect result of the sun.
Yeah.
So
you appreciate the sun for what it did, but you don't need to like watch
yes,
it all.
Yes, I'm
time.
A fan of the sun. Like it's like Paul Verhoeven. Like good job a while ago.
You did good.
And for that, I will never turn my back on you. The sun is the Quentin Tarantino of the solar system. So like permanent decision made. I rely on you. I think you are amazing. You know, Kill Bill being a two-parter is fine if that's what comes with it. But does the rain get to you over time when you, but you don't know because you were in Oregon already, like you...
Oregon?
Yeah, that's a small violation. I didn't say Oregon. I said Oregon.
Oh, what?
I think that's what they were booing.
Gin?
It's... Okay. It's cool.
I mean, that's a lame thing to hold your ground on. That's one vowel. What do you guys do to Canadians? I mean, I'm sure they come. They probably call it Brigadoon here. That doesn't make any sense. But you were born under an umbrella. So
it does though. Yeah.
Fucks with you.
Around like June when it's still. Like shitting on you, you start to get a little.
That's the June gloom, right?
Yeah. You start to get a little crazy. Mm-hmm.
And right now, everybody's very happy because they're like, oh, the sun's out and it's going to start raining.
Yeah, and like the Oregonians I think about now are like, okay, I'm ready to start wearing coats again. Like, people are very conflicted about now.
I just realized we've been talking about the weather in our podcast. I'm so sorry. I apologize. What's the opposite of the weather in conversation? Do you believe in God, McKenna? Let's just skip to why not.
Well, after today,
yeah.
I'm questioning it.
Because he made it so wonderful that you're thinking of converting back to, you know.
Something, I don't know.
Were your parents religious?
No, not at all. I never went to church.
Did you resent them for not being religious?
No.
Come on, you wanted a little bit of God.
I'm very open-minded because of it. It's good.
So they were nice, intellectual parents?
Yeah. They let me go to church with, like, my friends, and I would go to church and be like, fuck, this is boring. Like, what is happening?
And then you'd come home, and they're like, I told you. I told you to go to an orgy. Okay. All right. Fucking Portland.
They're sacrilegious here.
So what's the trying to think of the opposite of talking about the weather. What's the worst thing you've ever done to another human being?
That's a really hard question.
Yeah, I know. I asked that of a podcast guest at one point, and he immediately knew. And it was he made his brother drink his own pee. He told him it was lemonade. And I've
definitely done a few things like that when I was little, or like dirt mixtures that you give to like the neighbor girl. Like
no, you.
Oh, you want to play Mario Kart?
You
drink this shit.
You know, the thing where you make the girl eat the dirt. Like, no, you need to tell us about that.
A little hazing.
What's the dirt girl story? Because it's not universal.
There was definitely a little girl that lived across the street from me who was like probably 5 years younger or something. So of course she was like super excited to hang out with the older, like, I'm so cool, you know, like hang out with the cool older girl. And it was like, you know, torture.
So your instinct to haze, yeah, you're like, yeah. I kinda, that's what we were just like, talking about. People that
some,
like you, there must be something wrong with them.
Put some dirt with like vanilla flavoring and water in a cup and be like, here, this is good. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she ate it.
Yeah. And then like would go home and cry.
Because she ate dirt.
Yeah.
How old were you at that point?
Maybe like...
23.
30. Like 12-ish?
Yeah, that's...
I don't know. When you're like the biggest asshole. Basically.
Well, you don't have... You know, human people, we don't have like what we define as... I don't know whether you, some people would call it morality, some people just call it a conscience. Like, we don't have that compass built into us. We're the most adaptable species on the earth. And you don't get there by having some ingrained thing that we won't do. Like, we'll do anything to anybody that our parents tell us is okay.
Yeah.
And we kind of like, we learn kind of over time. We're like, oh, you know what? Life is more fucked up if we keep doing shit that we just want to do and we don't start thinking about other people. But like, 8-year-olds are sociopaths. They'll just pull the wings off of shit. What's unclear is, do they learn? Do they biologically hit a point where they're like, okay, I'm going to stop doing that, or do you just have to stop them? Like, you kind of want to like make a big iron cube, maybe in this steel mill, and like drop a bunch of human children into it, and just do a bunch of experiments. But then you'd realize, wait, maybe I'm doing this because I didn't learn how to be moral. I don't know. I know that your brain is made out of all these there's a biological capitalistic like board meeting in your brain every day where different departments of your brain kind of compete for resources. And so when you're a kid, like they say that if you raise a kid in an environment where it can't stand up, and I think we should all try this tonight. that if the kid comes out of that like 2-foot-high like crawl space at an age after their legs are fully able muscularly to walk, they, even if you like give them like regarding Henry physical therapy, they will never, because their brain, that part of their brain, the one that dedicates resources to motor function in their legs, has long ago been zoned out during some city board meeting in its right. In the brain. I was like, no, there is no need to walk. This person needs to navigate darkness and crawl hand over hand and change light bulbs or whatever they're doing down there. Telekinesis, maybe. I don't know. Maybe.
So some people just realize how to only be an asshole when they're young.
Basically. I think it's possible. I'd like to be more optimistic than this, but I think it's possible that being that compassion might be like facial recognition, walking, being good with feng shui. These might just be little talents we have, and being compassionate actually yields positive results, long-term for kids on the playground, hopefully.
I'm sure it's that. Yeah, I don't think it's inherent.
But that's a bummer, though. That's like we're all like these empty canisters of just flesh that are just waiting to be either made into serial killers or saints.
Yeah, that's
and then
how
we
it
all
works.
Land somewhere way between. It's a bummer.
I guess. I think it's awesome.
But it's also kind of amazing at the same time, because then some people grow to be so amazing.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
What about the lack of meaning to being amazing? Like, why is it?
Like, it just happens at random.
But the randomness makes it beautiful. You're saying?
I think so.
Why? Can you explain the roll of
a die. Yeah.
But why is that more beautiful? Why is chaos more beautiful than purpose?
Because it's like the antithesis of everything we seek. It's like, oh, we're just going the wrong way about it. We just got to accept that it's randomness and derive meaning out of that.
Oh.
I think that's cool. Like, I mean, it's one thing to like catch on to a meaning that already exists. That's like seeing a bird. But it's another thing to like, I'm going to invent the bird. It's a common example, I think. We can all relate to creating our own fowl, right?
So I don't know if I have the ability to articulate this. You're saying that within, if we accept that our nature is chaotic, we can achieve a meta order.
Yeah. Well, also just that, like, okay, so if it was predestined that I was supposed to just say, I mean, be here today, that's not very interesting. That's part of a list. There's a long list of things. Like, the fact that I'm here because of several crazy random factors that could never happen to anyone else just because of sheer probability and stuff, I find that amazing and more potentially miraculous than like someone with a plan making the rules for everything. I don't know.
Like, our friendship is the result of a random occurrence. You came to the show and I said, is there a dungeon master here? And you raised your hand and now we're friends.
Yeah.
And more than friends, employees.
I also drive you. Yeah. I wear many hats.
But that same chaos means that I could have a strange happening in my brain that makes me lunge across the table and rip your face off because I think it's a sandwich.
Which is also really fascinating, right?
But you will die. Will you die going like, ah, life, I'll take three.
I don't think you can take three. That's the problem, right?
All right. Maybe that's my problem. I want to buy life in bulk.
Maybe it's just that I'm a dungeon master, though, because I just everything I do is rolling dice. It's all randomness. And then when you start to understand that those same rules of dice rolling are just genetics and particle collisions, it's all just all these weird probabilistic things that happen. I think that's just like understanding the code to the universe.
And almost. The idea that your brain is... while it's looking at the die rolls, is the result of a bunch of die rolls mm-hmm. over billions of years
yep.
and hundreds of billions of years. If you go, like the Big Bang forward, like random collisions turning into RNA, turning into primordial soup, turning into evolutionary cold war, hot war between organisms, resulting in the biological weapon survival-wise that is your brain, that in addition to recognizing red apples and yellow bananas is able to recognize numbers on a die and create a game that is based on random numbers. So you're using the end result of a bunch of randomness to look at infantile randomness, simulations of fundamental randomness, and we have fun, and we pretend that there's order, we pretend that there's good guys and bad guys, and we seek meaning, but you can find peace by accepting that there is no meaning.
Yeah, and I mean, what you're talking about order is like, the only order is what we add to it, you know? It's what we're ordering around in the randomness. I think that's a cool part of it. Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
This episode of Harmontown is brought to you by Fulton and Rourke. Jeff, you're sick of spilling all your colognes all over the place. You hate liquid colognes. Is that correct?
It's my nemesis. It's the thing that gives me nightmare dreams all night long.
I can't remember how many times I've walked in on you just covered in sticky, wet cologne.
I have traveled and broken a bottle of the cologne that I wear, and then my luggage smells like a French whorehouse for the rest of time.
Yeah, but Fulton & Rourke is a men's fragrance and grooming company that specializes in solid colognes, shave, and shower products, all designed to make getting ready easier and more enjoyable.
Now, when you say solid colognes, do you mean like solid in the jazz sense? Like, wow, that jazz solo was solid.
You know, I do mean that, but I also mean physically solid as well.
Oh, like a little... like you're talking about a wax-based cologne that travels in a little small package that I can't spill all over my luggage and smell like a Mexican tit house. So these are travel-friendly, wax-based colognes that can go anywhere?
Plus, there's nothing to break or spill, and of course, they all smell fantastic.
Fantastic.
Like a Mexican tit house.
I mean, there's different levels of Mexican tit house. I mean, there's the high-quality ones, there's the ones that you wish you didn't go to.
Right.
Yeah.
Titas Fantasticos.
Is one of their fragrances called Mexican tit house?
Yeah.
Que Fantástico.
Fulton & Rourke's bar soap is designed to exfoliate the skin with or without a washcloth.
Also, you don't even have to touch it. It comes and does it in the night.
Well, that's amazing. That's literally unbelievable.
Did you know, Spencer, that GQ magazine just named their shave cream the very best on the market today?
Well, yeah, of course I knew that. Why would you ask?
I mean, who am I asking? I mean, this guy, you go to his house... it's like an episode of Hoarders. So many back issues of GQ magazine there.
Right. And I got to tell you, my house is made out of bricks of cologne.
Wax-based cologne, I hope.
Yeah, yeah.
Try it yourself at FultonandRourke.com and save 15% off your purchase by using the code FERAL, F-E-R-A-L, at checkout.
That's FERAL at checkout.
Smell good for once, you fucking bums.
Fulton and Rourke, get your smelling good.
Fulton and Rourke, time to get your stink on.
Off.
Get your bad stink off and get your good stink on.
Fulton and Rourke.
Not by Menon. Different corporation.
By Fulton and Rourke.
But what does that have to do with pussy? Can you hear me, Portland? More like pussy land. Sorry. Speaking of pussy, let's bring my fiance up here, Erin McGathy. We have to figure out. I'm gonna stand. Is there?
Am I staying?
I think we don't have enough. There's another mic, Erin. Yep. You set.
I can coach it.
No.
Well, that's, I don't know.
No, I want you to sit like on the pedestal that you belong on.
Am I still
want to be put
here?
On a pedestal? You're keeping me down by putting me up.
And yeah, McKenna, you stay seated.
Oh.
You're from
sorry.
Portland.
McKenna, I not to be a girl, but I love your hair.
Oh, thank you.
Looks great. You're like the mermaid mayor of a fairy grove.
Yeah.
Where everyone listens to the Runaways.
I've seen a ton of girls with purple in their hair, and I was kind of like, I want to like gather all of us together and get like a group purple hair shot. Because I feel like most people have purple. I'm down for any color, but purple seems to be a popular one.
I felt like when I was looking for people that were lived closer to this steel mill, the hair got more purple as... I hope 5 years from now we don't find out this is some kind of cluster.
It's a cool color. Remember a couple weeks ago when you came home and my hair was gray? I was trying to do that.
I love the gray, actually. Like, yeah. I've thought it for fall I might go gray.
Oh, man, yeah. That'd look amazing.
It's like witchy. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you seen The Gray with Liam Neeson?
That's what I'm going for.
I haven't
seen it.
It
doesn't matter what color your hair is. The wolf will eat you. He's a predator, a biological killing machine. He doesn't care about your hair. It doesn't matter if we make a fire. Doesn't matter if we wake up. Doesn't matter how many legs you have. Doesn't matter if we're in the snow. Doesn't matter if we walk 5 feet or 500 feet. It doesn't matter that we're here. The wolves may walk by, not see us. It doesn't matter if they don't see us. They might smell us.
Dan, if the sequel to The Gray took place in Portland and there was that same monologue, what would that sound like?
It doesn't matter if they're on Cooch. It doesn't matter if they're in the Sandy Hut. Doesn't matter if they enjoy shuffleboard, if they're a day drinker or a hipster drinker. It doesn't matter if they innovate. It doesn't matter if they remember that they used to make yogurt hair. It doesn't matter if the video game is independent or corporate. It doesn't matter if women are properly represented in the video game genre. The wolf will still eat you. We're arguing about whether or not Tomb Raider should have big tits, but the wolf just sees a hot dog.
I want to talk about one thing. Hot dogs, yes. I got very hungry just now. I want to talk about the plane ride here and the fact that I've noticed this because I've traveled by plane enough to know that this isn't a fluke. Sometimes, okay, well, let me start with all the time. All the time.
The food is bad.
Yes, yes. The peanuts are too small. Every time, without exception, everyone in this room who's ever been on a plane, no one will argue with this. Every time you're on a plane, the position of your seat back is catastrophically important to them, the people who are in charge of whether you live or die. Because the plane is a piece of equipment that is defying physics, flying through the air like a metal fucking rock, and you are in it, and your seat being back or forward to them is a big deal. You, for instance, if you'd like to test this theory, try keeping your seat back the whole time. They won't let you. We all know this. We accept it. Your seat has to be forward when you land. Now, sometimes, and I find this very interesting, sometimes your seat doesn't work.
Mm.
Now, the reason I find this interesting is because the times your seat doesn't work is because the airline is shitty and the airplane isn't working right. And it is those times, not when you need your seat to be back, It is their failure that immediately solves the problem. Mm-hmm. I find that very interesting.
I feel like she already knows the story.
She's annoyed by it, but I'm like, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I find this very interesting. Like, I've had this conversation so many times where like
I'm not annoyed by it.
My
like,
seat is like kind
of a funeral.
Half back, and the person comes by and they go, "I really need that seat to be up before we land." And that could have been a woman or a gay man. The and I go, like, it doesn't, I'm, hey, man, you try. Make it go, make it do what you need it to do in order for the plane to land. And they go, oh, it doesn't work? Oh okay, fuck it.
That's fuck true,
it.
That happens.
Fuck it, because it's our fault. Fuck it, because the plane doesn't work. It's a crisis if it's on you. It's fuck it if it's on them. Hey, I'm sorry, we really need that engine to be on the wing. Well, the engine's not on the wing. It came disconnected up in the air. The plane is doing a fucking barrel roll toward the soil. Oh, okay, well, sorry. Fuck it. I hope you live.
I'm on your side. But, and I get your frustration, but that guy coming by, he just has to, his big crisis is that he wakes up every day and has to tell a bunch of people in an airplane in 2014 to not smoke in an airplane and to do all these things. And then he said, fuck it, because like, that's how he feels.
Yeah, but what exactly, if you were, exactly.
But what if you were a secret flyer?
What is that?
Oh, a person
who... You guys don't know about these secret flyers?
Like a death's head officer
that's air marshal?
Pretending to be a tourist. Like, aha, my seat can go back. You just need to try harder, prisoner number 137. Okay, great.
I understand your frustration. I have a personal connection to this because after this happened, I was awaking from a beautiful nap. I overheard the interaction, which is fine because I have similar interactions. And then I unfortunately said to you, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. And then I was on the other side of the Gaza Strip for the next couple of
the
hours.
Other side, because the Gaza Strip is a line on a ping pong table.
That is what I heard.
No,
the other side of the, you know what I mean.
The point being, and what I said to you is, of course it's not a big deal. That's the tyranny. Of course it's not a big deal.
Can we talk about the body scanning machines?
How you opt out and I don't.
I opt out. Thank you. The more
yes.
I said opt out, the sooner that those things are fucking taken out of the airports. You know who doesn't opt out? Who loves just getting fucked in the anus with an airplane wing?
Well, let's not knock that. That's a lot of fun.
It actually sounds great because they're kind of tapered at the end and then they get slowly bigger toward the body of the plane.
There's a lot of variety.
Then there's an engine in the middle of it with like a suction like turbine.
It's a really good setup.
I'm going from here to Tarzana, California to market the airplane wing dildo.
When you opt out, don't you get like...
harassed?
Yes, exactly. You like every time
depends
I opt out,
are, yeah.
I get taken to like the little room.
Or do you say
it's
to,
like
do you ask them to get taken to a private room or do they or do
no,
they just
it'll
take
be
you
like they test something on your clothes and then they're like, "Oh, it's a hair gel that's setting the alarm off. We have
what?
To take you back for a search."
You got to stop wearing that
maybe
t-shirt
this is just
to
the
Portland
airport.
I think you have to stop being an Italian pornos.
I just had bad luck. I don't know.
I mean, I have a very mixed experience. I mean, it's not great, but I think most people are pretty nice. Though there are some airports where they're like, "You're opting out." Huh? She's opting out. What? What? We got. She's up. All right. Noted. And then an hour later, someone comes over, and I'm not going to disclose what part of the country that was, but
they've definitely been instructed. It's out. They can't keep a secret. It's not like it's the fucking
yeah. Though post. Today I had a very nice conversation, and I've become as I've gotten older, I've really cherished my female friendships, and there is something to staring in the eyes of a strange TSA woman who says to you, "I'm going to take my hands up between your legs until I..." The first several times I did this, I got this line until I think they corrected it. "I'm going to take my hands up your thighs until I meet the resistance." And the first time I was like, the Resistance.
Yeah, they're hiding out in there. They got a base of operations.
All right, Han Solo, thank you for fighting the good fight. Until I meet the Resistance, they're supposed to say resistance, which also, I don't like to think of my pussy as resistance. I don't want to think of it as a portal either, but I don't want to think of it as some sort of like force field.
It's not like
Kathy cartoon, hashtag Kathy cartoon. But today, I had a really nice conversation with this young woman who was like, airports, right? And I'm like, you're telling me. As she's like touching my boobs, and I'm like, this is cool that we can have this moment. Like, you know, witches used to dance in the forest, and
I like the idea that your vagina is the resistance, because I like that you're, I love you for your humanity. And when I think of the resistance,
the good fight,
I think of the TV miniseries event V. From the 80s, like,
can
I think
you,
of like
ex- I'm not
I
familiar.
Think of your vagina as like spray painting over propaganda that was put there by aliens and going like, fuck it, we can fight. And I'm like, yeah, I love this vagina. It fights, you know.
I'm moved. I mean, it does make you feel like a battleship a little bit, where they're like, do you have any devices? No, ma'am, I do not, but I could.
Yeah, I could.
Could have some devices.
That's a I'm just learning about this. You
Dan, before you say anything, this is my own expression that I came up with. It's not like common vernacular.
Well, no, but I want to. I mean,
think it's intuitive, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know what I mean when I say of kangaroos.
Who here has kangarooed before? Nope. No.
Let's say
that's just dishonest. You guys are just being dishonest.
Across the country.
Yeah, I don't believe that. They're just lying out there.
Yeah, like you guys didn't go to a concert where they were searching
for.
She means putting a nickel bag of marijuana in your vagina or anything that might need to get through some kind of checkpoint. You've never. No one in Portland has ever used their birth chamber.
No, it takes a lot to see the nobility in kangarooing.
I do those, you know, I don't opt out. I go through the back scanner machines, and every time I, like, it's probably psychosomatic, but every time I just, like, my balls hurt afterwards. It's like they're, I could just feel, you know, all those little guys dying.
I feel lightheaded. I always feel lightheaded.
It's weird. It's got to be, like, it can't really be happening, right?
But then again, what would make more sense? I mean, if there's anything useful happening in that machine to them, then of course it's, like, you could feel it. I don't know.
I felt really good about my decision to opt out when early on some TSA agent said to me, oh, you know, they took out 70% of the radiation. Do you know that? They took out 70%. And then another guy was like, no, 100%. I was like, you fucking don't know what you're talking about at all. They were like, oh, we should really take out this radiation.
They can't
That's not the way it works.
Like it's salad
ridiculous.
Dressing. Like they're like, yeah, no, there's hydrochloroform.
It's the only thing that they... God. In the same way that I fucking resent when I go to Urban Outfitters and I'm trying to return a sweater and someone's like, have you worn this? Like when I haven't and I have not worn the sweater. I don't know. And it's like, is your last name Urban Outfitters? I know you're making $10 an hour and I'm a human being and you're a human being. And guess what's not a human being is Urban Outfitters. Fucking take my sweater. Right? H&M is worse. And then the same way with the TSA agents when they're like, yeah, you know, they took out the radiation. It's like, what? It's on your deathbed, are you going to say, I was a company man?
But like, it's a radiation dispenser. That's its job. How do they take out the radiation?
No, exactly.
It's just a box.
I looked it up afterwards and there's nothing to it. One guy one day was... I have ice in my mouth like a...
There's an urban legend, or it's true, but I will say it's an urban legend because I don't want to spread things that... I don't want to be totally irresponsible, but there's legend has it that the guy that invented that machine won't go through it. Like, that's the thing. How many people... You're Portland. Do you guys opt out when you go to the airport? Portland has a beautiful airport, don't they? I mean, it's pretty nice.
They have cool little shops and stuff. I opt out because of the philosophy of it, because of the Big Brother bullshit of it.
But what would you say to somebody that said, well, what about a metal detector? I mean, just because we had...
No, that's fine. But I mean, with the... Well, exactly. I mean, with the... I don't know. I'm going to... I'm not the voice of this cause, but the idea of I mean, those body scanner machines really don't detect that much. And if someone is really trying to smuggle something, they can. It just seems to me that they're developing technology so they can take pictures of us all the time and so they can just ease shit in. I don't know. It's a little conspiracy theorist of me. But also I'm like, fuck you. I just paid $500 for a flight and I have to stand with my arms out and there are pictures of what it looks like on another screen. And then, I don't know, it just bugs me. And also not everybody has to do it. It goes back and forth. And it's like, well, then what is the point of this? It's just like a slow control thing. Like TSA was bored and so they came up with this fucking thing. I hope I can fly on
I hope that H&M and Banana Republic or whoever you were talking about don't. Maybe the next podcast Erin will just be naked. She's being boycotted by all the clothes retailers.
They come to the house and take all my clothes.
God damn it, there was McKenna, how you doing over there?
Oh, I'm good.
How's your nightmare of being in front of people?
Reliving all my airport experiences right now.
Yeah. Not to harp on this topic, but find this on YouTube. There's an amazing uplifting video of these two kids who were handing out opt-out flyers at an airport. And it's not a short attention span thing. Like it's like a 40-minute video, but you can like click through it. It's just these two kids are at an airport and they're standing at the top of the escalators in the public area before you go through the machines, and they're handing out flyers to raise awareness of like opt out day or something like that. Like you don't have to go through these machines if you don't want to. And the airport officials come up to them, they're videotaping it, and they start trying to bounce them, and like they're using all the official language, and you can't be here, you can't be doing this, you can't be distributing this literature, and they bother to say, I think we can stand here and talk to people and hand them literature. We're in an airport. You have people down there doing the same thing for some religion. We're just doing the same thing. And then they get increasingly aggressive, and then they call the cops, and this cop, not an airport cop, just a regular cop has to come. And the regular cop is just this guy who refreshingly, like he's got the buzz cut and the gun belt, and he just looks like any other cop that might do any horrible thing. But he like kind of scratches his head and he walks away with the airport guy, and he's like, comes back to the people, and he's like, yeah, I don't know. I think the Constitution says you can do whatever you want.
He just printed out a copy, and he was like, oh God.
They gave me a gun and a walkie-talkie. I think I'm supposed to just keep people safe. I don't think I'm supposed to. I think you have to. And the airport guy is like, what's your fucking name? I'm an airport guy.
It's the same as when you try to return a sweater at Urban Outfitters. It's identical. And I'm saying this, I feel strongly about this because I worked at Urban Outfitters and at Hot Topic. Yeah, really. Dark times. But at Hot Topic, the clothes are so cheap, and I would have colleagues that would be like, I don't know, should we take this back? Should we accept it? And I'm like, yeah, what? We make $7 an hour. What does this matter? It doesn't matter. Sorry, I'm all fired up. I don't know why I'm so fired up.
Well, it's the echoey chamber. It makes you feel like you're in church.
It's that machine.
It's that machine in back. It just makes you think of Flashdance and how women have been exploited by disco movies. Let's find the pain in the room. In our new segment, let's find the pain. Who's in pain? Emotional pain.
Dan is.
Your hand went up immediately.
Pain.
Do you mind talking about it? What's your name?
Seth.
Seth, what's your emotional pain?
Kind of lost all my best friends at once.
You lost all your best friends at once? Are you willing to come up and talk about it? Okay, Seth, everybody. Go that way.
Do we have extra mics?
You can share my mic.
All right.
We can share. It's Portland. Okay. Here, Seth, you sit there. I'm not going to be the... I'm gonna lord over you guys. All right. So, you lost all your best friends in a short period of time?
Yeah, in like a weekend.
What'd you say?
In like a weekend.
Oh, okay.
Was alcohol involved?
That's a good question.
So, yes.
Yeah, in some semblance, but not for the actual thing.
Sure.
Was it a wedding or a murder? Or?
We could speculate all night.
It was a murder at a wedding, in fact.
It was a wedding?
It was a wedding murder. It was a themed wedding. It went poorly.
Was it? Okay. sorry. I'm sorry. We're just gonna, for the next 2 hours, you're like, was it, did birds attack you?
We'll figure it out eventually. We'll get there.
So I recently, like back in December or so, moved from my hometown of Anchorage, Alaska, down to Seattle, which is where I live now, which is really far. And
so you're following a hipster ley line. Like, you're going to end up living at Stonehenge. He moved from Anchorage to Seattle to Portland. He's going to... Okay.
Are you afraid of people without tattoos?
No. Like,
No, I'm sorry. I love tattoos. I just know that Anchorage and Seattle and Portland all are famous for their beautiful tattoos. And go ahead.
Yeah. No, my only thing is... Like, I have a beard and have for some
time.
Sure
do.
But it's utilitarian.
This is a guy, sorry to interrupt, but if Spencer's a brownie, this guy's a blondie. He's a Spencer type for the podcast listeners.
It's for sure
and
bizarre
that's hair
Spencer
color.
Is opposite coloring and looks the same.
He's a blonde Spencer. Okay, continue.
So I moved. Beard utilitarian. It was cold.
What's utilitarian about the beard?
It's really cold there. Yeah. You know, Alaska.
I was in my hotel that's also as cold as Alaska, and I was I was shirtless and I was trying to sleep. And when I had my beard on my chest, I was fine. And when I swept it to the side, I was freezing cold.
It's like an Afghan for your neck. It's wonderful.
It's like a blanket from your face.
And I heard the people in Ferguson are reporting it's a natural tear gas filter.
Oh, definitely. You just put it over your eyes like that. It works.
It's just an adaptation. We're all making it. All right,
anyway,
continue.
I'll make this super brief.
You don't have to make it brief.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
You gotta leave room for
Go
the goof.
Go faster.
This isn't Desperate Housewives. It's a fucking Portland podcast. Like we want to hear your human story.
I moved and had some really close friends who I did podcasts with, and we were made a lot of stuff together, and we were continuing to do it like kind of long
you
distance.
Did the journey with okay?
Because I was the only one who moved because I had to get out because it's the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's
Alaska.
It's Cincinnati in the north. no offense to Cincinnati, they make wonderful chili. So I moved and then came back in like May, like 6 months later for the first time, just for a weekend. And we hung out and everything was great. And then there was huge social drama because it turned out I had, Anchorage is a small town.
Thrown your anchor into a sea.
I found Anchorage, I guess you could say, in a port that ended up being... Oh, that's a really bad way to talk about a human being. I'm taking that back immediately.
I feel like we should commit to the pun. We all know women are at ports.
We've hit a major plot point, and then you guys got derailed with this horrible word game.
It was a short-term mortgage, and then...
Mortgage.
But was very friendly and was very amicable, and we were friends. And then she started dating another friend in the close friend group, and things kind of spiraled from there. But it was the first time that like really close friends were kind of like, all right, no, we're donezo. Because
did you become the this is the thing
agitator.
That drives me insane about romance, the dark underbelly of it that we see. This is why I don't like romantic comedies, but because Aaron loves them, but I'm projecting the thing that drives me insane, my worst nightmare, is being cast as the villain in someone else's story, even though I didn't. It's just like, oh, that's convenient for you. Like, I'm the wind beneath your fucking wings because it's like taboo.
Well, and not only was I the villain, I was Sauron on the proverbial mountain, literally a country away. You know, like you had to go through Canada, which is like, I don't know, dwarves live there or something. And then there was me, you know, being all villainy in
Denmark. So became
you were you the other man ever?
No, not at all. This was before they got together.
But there were fuck those friends.
Yeah, yeah.
No one thinks about Alaska anyway.
It's not too big a deal because, yeah, I don't need to go back. I'm good for now. Like,
well, but
Seattle's
you said
cool.
you're in emotional pain. You lost all your friends in a couple of days. Like, you went from 5 to 0 or whatever it is. I don't mean to presume the numbers. I would start with 3, and then he needs to hear more than fuck those friends.
You're right.
My mom always used to say when I would go out and I would get beat up by people, and then I would come home and I would go, Scott and so-and-so beat me up. And my mom would go, well, then now you know you don't like those guys, right? You know, like, and here they are wanting to beat you up. So some problems solve themselves.
And you have to see them every day. And like that, and that's the part that's still raw, is because of the internet, which is a great thing in so many ways. We're just kind of one Kevin Bacon away from each other.
Yeah.
You know, and have a whole bunch of mutual friends. So like, it's there's only so much hiding and blocking and muting that you can do.
Did they break up with you via like an email or some kind of conversation?
No, it was like, hey, I'm back in town for three days. Everything's cool one day, the next day. Oh, by the way. podcast listeners, it was
right. He's flipping up. He's giving double birds.
Well, without really knowing the situation, I would say to not really take that too personally. If you really believe that you weren't in the wrong,
Worry about it.
You've moved, so it's You're not really winner. About you. It's like they're like, look, who's in the Anchorage crew?
Well, it sounds like they're resentful that you got out, right? I mean,
right, maybe. Yeah.
I'd imagine that it sucks
poor
to live there.
All that.
Am I hearing a different thing? I mean, he's not wondering whether or not he should like these people. He is saying it hurt. You know, it like is a wound that
and
was
it's
inflicted,
valid.
And it's just sitting there. So, what's the salve that you put on it? It won't heal it. The thing that'll heal it is his own body and time. But is there like some Neosporin that we could squirt on it in the
at
form
least
of a?
He got
well,
laid.
For me, reminding myself, if I was in his position, reminding myself that it wasn't really about me would be that Neosporin, which is why I said that.
Right, definitely. I wasn't, and I, oh my God, I wasn't arguing
oh,
with you.
Jesus Christ. Oh, Jesus.
You guys shouldn't
God
be therapists at all.
if there's a
Dan
couple's therapists in Portland.
Opening up our own practice. It's called Mixed Nuts.
I mean, I think the first thing we need to do, not to be Geraldo Rivera about it, but I gotta reach around him like Kelly McGillis in Top Gun. I just embrace him. And you can't see it on the podcast. It's not for applause, but thank you. How does it feel to be touched and held by someone you admire who will never betray you? I don't care who you date next. I'm never gonna touch her. Every time you hear my voice, I'm talking to you. Praise Jesus!
I'm very sorry that happened to you. In these moments of pain, I like to quote one of my favorite shows of all time, My So-Called Life. I would reference an episode halfway through the series where Claire is getting over Jordan and realizes that she's over him, and she says, you know what? It hurts until it doesn't. It hurts until it doesn't.
That just seems like such a fuck
it
off.
It hurts.
Like,
no, it's not. It's not a fuck off. I mean, the meaning
true.
Behind that is like, no, like if you feel sad about this, your feelings are valid and you're going to sit in them, but you won't feel that way forever. It'll expire. It hurts until it doesn't.
What if it hurts forever?
Well, then there's something wrong with you, and you should jump off
the bed. You die, and it doesn't hurt anymore.
Oh. What if you know well, that about pain?
That makes me feel a lot better. You just die, and you're fine.
What if you're so smart? What if you're so smart?
If it hurts
smart,
forever, then it's not about that situation.
What if you're so smart that you know that about pain, and it doesn't change anything? What do you do in those moments when knowing how your brain works and how your heart works doesn't change anything that's going on in them? Is there a technique? Is there a
you go inside. You gotta go inside.
Get out of the sun. Get out of the fucking orange Hitler that
emotions,
is the sun.
Your emotions are a lot like weather. They come and go, and sometimes they make sense and follow patterns, and other times it's like a freak storm. It's like you go inside or you.
I had a friend who suggested he got over a breakup. He watched all the seasons of Farscape.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
I mean, the thing is, it's not a that's the thing is that like it's a tired expression, but it's in a dumb old adage. But time really does heal all wounds. The good news about being sad is that in times when you're sad, art is better, music is better. You're probably more creative. You're seeing things differently. Like you're really living because you're bleeding from your soul as you're walking around. Like that's the good news. Bad news is that it's going to feel bad until it doesn't feel bad anymore. That's just time. The bad thing to do is to try to fix it by fucking, you know, doing like putting a
building a windmill or whatever crazy thing you would do.
Talking about it on a podcast in front of...
Yeah, well, I don't think Seth's the type of guy that's going to do anything. He's going to... I mean, by the
way... Wait, what? He's going to do great things.
No, I was saying I don't think he's going to do anything that's like unhealthy with his pain. Okay. If he's willing to like cry it out from an audience at a podcast, that means he's already actually like got oxygen and that's going to heal. But Seth, do you ever listen to this podcast?
Yeah.
Do you think it would help you heal a little bit to play a character that you whose life you had more control over game of Dungeons and Dragons, maybe? Whose wounds could not hurt you, no matter who did anything to you? Do you think... I don't know how... I mean, we got a smattering of applause when we asked who listened to the podcast. So,
yeah.
But the thing is, during the podcast, we end it by playing a round of Dungeons and Dragons... on the podcast. So I guess if you're not a fan, fuck off, I guess. But not in a mean way. Just in a, you won't maybe not know what's going on. Or if you're a gaming fan, I mean, this is a big like tabletop intensive conference. So we're going to be, we have an ongoing campaign that we play, and we need a Chris DeBerg, who will be Seth, and we need a, if McKenna would be willing to be, wait, so we have... We need a Quark, and you'll play Chris DeBerg. Sorry, McKenna. Okay. You get the character sheets, Spencer?
Yeah, let me just bust these out real quick.
All right. While he's busting those out...
Keep being comedic.
Aaron, did you want to read the list of...
Oh, sure. I mean, this is just a shout-out to... Do you guys know who Rob Schraub is? He's somebody who's come on the podcast.
That's 8 people.
Do you have the list on?
Yeah, maybe I'm looking ahead and I'm going like, you know what? It's not the venue.
We also have Dustin Marshall's technology corner.
Dustin explained to us earlier that if you pay attention to the size of cell phones, it appears that their size changes over time based on people's needs, and that's similar to evolution. And we started mocking him for that revelation.
If you need a time filler, I can pull out my phone. I have this... great treatment for Alan Alda. It plays a...
Wait, where is that guy? Is that guy here? Is the guy here that read the treatment? Oh, there he is. Are you...
There.
Did I humiliate you? Did I make you feel bad by telling that story? Okay. Do you want... Can I turn it into a win for you? Do you want to read your treatment to the people, or...
Yeah.
Anything you want, like for real, like you don't, I'm not bullying you. Like, if you're actually worried that you would read it and then people would go, I'm going to rip that off. Like, but, or do you just want to talk about it for a second?
The first 4 sentences.
Okay. All right. I just want to humanize you for them. I don't want the moral of the story to be that people are bad. I want it to be that there are heroes among us.
I love it.
What's your name?
It. Jason.
Jason, all right. Jason's the guy who read me a treatment off his phone at the cooler of ice.
I was so annoyed, and I felt so bad. It's the weirdest thing I've ever done.
I wasn't that annoyed. I just thought it was remarkable.
I actually canceled my D&D night tonight to be here. So
oh, God. All right.
What do you play as in D&D?
I was a warlock for a while. Right now I'm a...
On the mic.
Warlock for a while, and right now I'm a paladin. So.
I gotcha. That's exciting.
Gil Minotranos. Yeah, nice. It's kind of getting old.
No, it sounds great.
David Cross is a family man.
Wait, let's reenact the encounter.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So, like, imagine a black and white strobing thing, like, from a crime show.
Yep.
Like, okay, and then we're look-alike actors. So, like, David Duchovny's playing me, and so I'm just, let's just reenact. Okay, I'm by the cooler. Okay.
Dan, this is the only time this is going to happen, but I have to do it now.
Okay.
So, David Cross is a put-upon family man and a super scientist. He works at the Enlightenment Corporation and tests the Bodhisattva chair, an electric chair that blasts people into enlightenment for science. Father of 3, his wife Jane keeps things kosher at home while wielding a gigantic hook for a hand.
Doesn't sound that bad.
Sounds great.
Not so bad.
All right, thank you, sir. What's your name again? Sorry.
Jason.
All right, Jason, everybody, the David Cross treatment writer. I know David Cross. We'll get that to him. But I don't think he makes those decisions. I think David Cross probably has an agent, and he's like, does anyone want to hire me? And then they go like, oh, the guy wants you to play a robot. All right. So you got the character sheets ready?
Yeah. Let me just let me give that to you. Give that to Aaron. And then the top one's for McKenna, and the rest is yours.
Let's hear it for Spencer as comptroller.
I mean, let's
so
not.
So great.
That's about what I deserve. That's
take
very apt, it's appropriate. I appreciate
I said it quietly.
I mean,
he's
now it's getting...
It. He's killing it.
Now it's getting dishonest. Now
he's
it's dishonest. I don't buy it. I'm not buying it anymore. It was a lot more believable before. So, thank you. That's what I'm looking for. That's what I need right now. Are you guys ready? Should I start this up?
Yeah, let's do it.
I don't have my D&D music, so I'm just going to play that warm-up music from earlier. It'll
we
really...
can hum it.
Do you want to hum it? I think that would be better, actually.
Okay.
Oh.
When we last met, our heroes had landed in some pretty hot water. After a late-night juice tour gone awry, the party retired with Spizbulb the Friendly Gnome, where they decided to break into the priest's juicery to look for clues.
Dum-ba-dum!
While inside the juicery, the gang heard a noise and arrived to see a beaten Father Tinder and an escaping assailant. Sharpie tracked down the would-be murderer to the Darmvon household, and what he found wasn't pretty. Darmvon and her son were murdered. Dead.
Oh.
There, Sharpie and the gang encountered the assassin, Spizbulb the Gnome. The little gnome cast powerful gnat magics and hurled insults, but something wasn't right. Blows were exchanged, but using his shrewd mind, Krista Berg determined that Spizbulb was an imposter, convincing their attacker to cast off his disguise, revealing himself to be none other than Father Tinder himself.
Yum, yum, yum.
Working together, the gang started to gain the upper hand, breaking through his shield while Quark slashed Tinder's head with a flaming sword. As the old man lay dying, white beams of light began streaming through the room as the Shard of Power worked its ancient and hideous magic. But what danger could the shard portend? What new evils must the gang face?
Here we come. Here we come. Here we come.
What tricks were still hidden away up Father Tinder's sleeve? Find out now.
Oh.
All new Harmontown. That was some great humming. I want to buy that album.
I assume the effect is the same as in the shower, but it sounded awesome to me. I think when we listen to the podcast, we'll be like, oh my God, stop groaning into the microphone.
So traditionally, you guys have a lot of questions at this point.
Well, I was humming.
Yeah, I wasn't listening. I was humming.
That's what I'm saying.
So just in a moment, where am I standing?
You guys are all standing together in the broken remnants of the Darmvon household. You see crumbling stone falling from the ceiling, and all the furniture in the room is destroyed, reduced to splinters. Everything is very hard to see because white light is dazzling you, going throughout the room before it concentrates onto a single glowing humanoid form, the form of Father Tinder. He starts to transform before you into an 8 feet tall, gray-skinned, stone-skinned, bull-horned man with glowing red eyes, powerful muscular limbs, and stony wings. A burning white flame grows brightly in his chest, and he looks not unlike a winged demon or something.
Hi.
Do you have more questions?
We're probably cool now, right? Now that he's transformed into this thing.
Are you asking me or are you asking him?
I'm kind of thinking out loud.
Okay, continue.
And I've worked for him for many a moon and a sunset. Four sunset, 20 moons.
Who are you?
I'm Father Tinder. I have transformed into my final form.
Like that lady at the drive-thru in the video? And the
yeah, whatever. But I'm getting all the chicken nuggets.
Now that you've transformed into your final form, you're probably really self-actualized and all your aggression is gone, right?
You could say that, yes, but I'll still need to destroy you.
We could talk about that.
We could, while I'm destroying you.
All right, I'm going to run. I'd like to run. What do you guys, we're standing there and this guy turned into a demon and he's going to kill us. Do you guys have any...
He has a glowy white spot in the middle of his chest.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't my first rodeo with gamey things. Yeah. That's usually the place you want to throw a sword or something.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Well, I mean, this isn't my first rodeo, but do you really want to throw your swords?
It's more of a Castlevania type, like you know, there's a lot of platformers from the old days.
Barbarian, not thinking things through very well.
Yeah, that's good characterization.
All right, I'm bolstered by your confidence. You think this is as easy as a boss battle in a video game? I'll attack his milky white spot. all right.
I'm not a D&D player, but in my gear I have a dragon dick, so
yeah.
I feel like that might work in this situation.
It's more of a trophy. I mean, I think I remember where you got that. I don't know if it's a weapon. It's something that it's a conversation piece.
Okay.
I mean, most things are a weapon against a milky white spot on the center of your chest.
Whose turn is it first, I guess?
I want to put it at a Quark's turn, how about? That's Seth there.
Oh, Seth, okay.
Well, let's go ahead and use a power attack.
All right.
Nice.
That's going to be less accurate than a normal attack, I'm afraid. And yet you hit him.
Dropping anchor.
Rushing towards your demonic foe, you plunge your sword deep into his side, dealing 12 damage.
Nice.
And that's not even the milky white spot.
It's true.
I'm excited.
Yeah. We're having a great time.
We can do this.
Yeah.
We are doing this.
Yeah, this is going really well.
No, I mean,
I
just...
I jinxed it.
Well, it was. Let's put it at McKenna's turn. That's Krista Berg, right?
Yes. Apparently it is.
So, yeah. You got your dragon dick.
Let's do this. Do this Salmon Street dick. Style.
Feel free to ask questions.
I may need some help on this. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, it occurs to me we're subjecting her to quite a lot.
Yeah, no. You're telling me.
I don't know half of this.
All right. I'm going to attempt to use a short bow.
No. McKenna, you're going to use the
I'm
short
going to,
bow.
I'm going to fucking shoot
you're
this gonna short bow.
You're going to shoot that short bow.
I'm shooting it into the milky white spot. I'm going to
yes.
I'm going to hope
yes,
it
she
it.
Is.
Yes.
Firing an arrow at his milky white spot. It was it might have been what is the lack of confidence? Lack of confidence. Or something. But your arrow misses its mark, plunging deep into the cobblestone walls of the dwelling.
It's okay. He knows we mean business.
Yeah.
It's a communication shot.
So let's put it at a dignity. That's Aaron.
All right. Foe!
Yeah.
Unworthy foe who has been deceitful and untrue. I'm going to throw my axe, and it's going to be the death of you. I guess I rhyme now. So I'm going to throw my axe. I'm going to throw it really hard at the middle of his face.
You do that. But it doesn't hit him in the middle of his face, but instead in his shoulder. Dealing... What's your strength? It's plus 3. 8 damage!
All right! Yeah!
The axe protrudes from his shoulder. It's not a joke.
I'd like to shoot a fireball at his milky white spot.
All right, casting your arms in a magical manner, you unleash a fireball directly towards his milky white spot. He attempts to dodge out of the way, but is too sluggish, and it hits him right in the chest, but not his milky white spot, like the nipple right next to it instead.
But a nice grouping, as they say in darts.
Yeah, very kinky D&D.
Is it? I guess there are dragon dicks and milky white semen... All this
no,
stuff.
It's great.
There was
great.
No semen, but now there is.
Portland, yeah. Most strip clubs in the world, right? Per capita?
I love hearing about it.
Most vegan strip clubs? Is that what you said? We'll talk after. We'll figure it out.
Dealing 17 damage.
All right.
All right.
And that's just the nipple.
It's just the
nipple. I shout out, the milky white spot. It's the way to go.
So he turns his eyes to you, the wizard who's casted all this magic, and he beats his powerful wings and lunges at you through the air, his claws outstretched, reaching right towards your neck.
That's my milky white spot.
He grabs you by the throat, dealing 9 damage and holding you fast in his sharp, rocky claw.
All right.
Is it possible for me to go out of turn and use diplomacy?
No. Okay. Afraid not. But you could do it in your own turn.
Thank you.
Which is only 3 turns away. Putting it at Seth's turn.
I appear to have some yarn.
You sure do. A whole ball, if I'm not mistaken.
I just thought it was funny because it's right next to the nutsack.
I thought he got rid of that nutsack.
It has not yet been erased.
You should combine it with the dragon dick.
I just want to take a moment and say how much joy it is for me to hear that Quark is about to use yarn. It's a very happy moment.
Actually, I also what's a cactus card?
That's like a business card that says Cactus Club or Bunch. Cactus Bunch.
Oh, right. Yes.
Buy one, get one free.
And also a strange painted stick. Is there any more information about that at all?
It's strangely painted in a stick. So, no.
So that I do not hit my compatriot who is being held by the demon, correct?
I mean, what are you trying to do?
I'm trying to attack, but not, cleave someone in half who isn't white spot guy.
Taking careful attention not to hurt your ally.
Thank you.
You slice with your sword at the demonic foe before you.
I got a hug, so.
But you were too considerate, and you go way wide and don't hit anything at all.
You know, just some advice. It hurts until it doesn't.
I knew that wouldn't be helpful.
So let's put it at Christaberg's turn then.
A post-it tells me I have a robot baby. Is there any use to the robot baby?
I mean, there's tons of uses. I don't think you know any of them. It's
probably not.
It's heavy. You could hit someone with it, maybe, or you could tell it something.
Give it a command. Give the robot baby a command.
Yeah. What was that?
Tell the robot baby. Give it a command. Maybe it'll.
Oh, so if I tell the robot baby to like infiltrate the milky white spot. And retrieve whatever's inside. I can attempt that.
You can, yeah, definitely.
Oh my God!
I'm gonna do that.
All right, say it. Say it to the baby.
Baby, go to the milky white spot.
Like you mean it, McKenna.
Yes. Go inside of it.
Like you know the baby's going to do it.
Take hold of the milky white spot. And bring it to me.
You say those things, and the robot baby's like, bzz, bzz. All right. He starts waddling over towards the giant demon thing. It's he's getting over there. The demon doesn't seem too occupied, probably because it's a robot baby. And he starts climbing up his leg, but it's going to take some time before he can actually infiltrate the milky white spot. For some reason, he doesn't seem to notice the robot baby. It's a weird phenomenon.
Okay, so then because I know the robot baby is approaching the milky white spot, I use diplomacy, and I look at Father Tinder and say, Father Tinder!
Uh-huh.
Can we... Sorry, I was hearing echoes.
It's just the sounds of Portland. There's trains, there's... 5,000 people outside.
I thought I was hearing my demons for a second. Father Tinder, one moment. Can you just look at my face for a second? Because I'm going to explain to you why you are such a great leader. But I'm using my diplomacy, which is basically hypnosis. Yes, I'm lying. Yes.
Yeah, you can't use diplomacy for lying.
Oh, I can't? Okay, thank you. Okay.
Oh,
Father
wow.
Tinder, you look like a piece of shit. Father Tinder, this final thing that you've turned into is no good. No one likes it. You have no friends. You're going to defeat us, and then you're going to be all alone. So stay still for a moment, because I want you to. I really want you to stay still. It's my heart's desire that you do not look anywhere but into my eyes.
He glares at you with his red eyes, and he looks like he's looking directly through you and through your soul, and he's like, I don't know what you're getting at, but I feel like I'm trying to, or I feel like I'm being manipulated here. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to start looking around continuously for the rest of the turn.
What's the status on the baby?
The baby's still working around. He's, you know.
Okay.
He's met the resistance.
He's headed for the resistance, someone said.
Someone in the audience said that.
That was my turn, right?
I mean, you could do a short action because you only said some words.
Okay, so I take a sword... And I try to stab his foot, so I peg him to the ground.
All right.
Like taxidermy, like a moth.
You stab at his foot, and it doesn't pin him to the ground, but it does hurt him somewhat. What'd you stab him with, a sword?
I did. I stabbed him with a sword.
Those are sharp. It deals 11 damage to his foot.
All right.
That's good.
I clap my hands like I finished a job, and I spit on the ground and twirl.
Like Mighty Mouse.
That yeah. might
do the dust off your hands move.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that actually happening?
Yeah, that
okay.
happens.
Okay,
yeah.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
All right.
And then I say, let's all journey towards truth. And then I sit down on the ground.
All
and
right.
I regret everything I just did.
Putting it at Sharpie's turn.
All right, lightning bolt at the Milky White spot. It's not the first time I've said it.
I feel like... Okay, I'm going to say that after this, you're out of spells of the third level, because that sounds
you're
like
you're cutting
all of
them. Me off?
Well, yeah. You only have so many, I mean. That's how it works.
When's the last time you heard me cast a lightning bolt?
You've cast three level... this is exciting. You've cast three level three spells
I
in the last
5 minutes.
I can
quit anytime I want. I don't have a problem.
You cast your arms in a magical manner, and pointing your lightning finger towards him, you unleash a torrent, a bolt of lightning. A bolt of lightning, but because he's not heeding Dignity's advice and looking all around, he finds it very easy to see it coming, and he dodges out of the way.
Ah, dumb. I mean, I don't want to tell you your job, but that's
I could explain it
dumb.
In a different way if you'd prefer.
No, you rolled.
You just did such a shitty job that he dodged us out of the way.
Yeah.
You're right. A terrible wizard.
You're
Hey,
you're,
look,
you're a bad
going,
friend. You're a bad friend.
It's going to hurt until it doesn't. It's going to hurt until it doesn't.
So Father Tinder Demon guy, he's still not noticing this baby for whatever reason. Maybe it's his stony skin makes him impervious to all but the heaviest of touches. But he starts squeezing on Sharpie. He starts squeezing on Sharpie harder.
Jesus Christ.
He fails at that, though. It's okay. It's like a neck massage or something.
I don't want to be one of those characters in the movie that says a little help, but... So I'm not going to do that.
A little help?
I'm not going to do that.
Wait, did you just do that? Or?
No. That's metagaming. I'm just saying I'm not doing that. I'm not going to be hack and say, little help.
All right.
I'm getting choked.
So let's put it at Seth's turn.
Sorry, who?
Your name's Seth, right?
I mean, yeah, I'm a gnome barbarian.
I know.
By the name of...
I'm just trying to be friends with you.
No, it's all right. And you know, I've created this artificial barrier. It's a defense mechanism. It's a
I think we all do.
Anyway. I'm going to use my Armulet of Winter and call a sleet storm to try and obstruct the view of evil Dr. Tinder. All right. Or Father Tinder, so he can't see the baby.
Dr. Tinder's
pretty good.
That's going to be my next sitcom. So you activate, holding your Armulet of Winter to the sky, you activate it, and driving winds and cold sleet? Sleet, you said. Sleet! Falls out of the sky and through the broken cracks in the ceiling. It's all making everything cold and slippery and hard to walk, and he's getting coated in rime, and it's getting in his eyes, and it's all kinds of trouble.
Oh.
He doesn't take any damage, but he seems to be blinded or at least visually impaired.
That's good.
It's great.
That's great, yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, it is. It's great. Let's put it in McKenna's turn, though. Who is Krista Berg?
I'm going to add to the sleet storm and use my weapon of sap to coat the snow that is falling on his face.
I love this idea, but a sap is actually like a beanbag full of quarters that you like hit someone with. In the face.
Can that... It can coat, right?
You could empty it out and then, like, yeah, it's like a beanbag. You could cut it open and
I'm
coat someone.
I'm gonna cut it open and the insides are gonna coat into the ice.
Yeah.
And further...
Now that, yeah, I can get behind that.
It's gonna block the view. Yes.
With a deft flick of your wrist, you slice a small incision in your sap, and lead dust sprinkles out, being taken up by the icy winds, and gets stuck in this guy's eyes harder. He's completely blind. If there was any sight he's had, it's gone now.
All right. Let's just keep. I get out a bucket of confetti, and I'm just like, hey. We just keep blinding him until he gives up. Which blind people should never do.
The baby's still crawling, right?
Yeah.
The baby's still working.
Since it's after your turn, the baby, he's reaching in there. He's reaching in the Milky
Way. So the baby is at the Milky White spot, like around the...
He's
at the rim of the Milky White spot?
He's situated about it. He's reaching in there with his little robot arm, and he can't fit his whole body in there, but he's really going for it. He's got a lot of gumption.
I love it.
Let's put it at a dignity.
I take out my lance, and I charge towards Father Tinder, and I aim directly between his eyes, which I know I've done before, but now it's with a different weapon. Mm-hmm. Here I come, good over evil. All praise Sistrusha.
Because he's blind, you charge directly into him and you hit him right in the forehead. His head skin that's made of stone, it cracks and several chips fall off, and he's got a kind of a dark hole in his head now, but he doesn't react like a human would to having his head impaled, in that he's still alive. He does, however... What's the damage on that? Sorry, this is...
It's like 80?
Come on, man.
No, I'm sorry. It's, the damage is 13.
It's not.
Well, it says 10 plus 3.
10 plus 3, that's it, yep.
13.
All right. Dealing 12 damage to his face. He staggers back as the force of your blow impacts him, and he drops Sharpie in the scuffle.
All right. See, I did that for you.
Thank you.
Let's put it at your turn.
All right. So you said now you took all my spells away.
No, just the third level ones.
All right.
You have less of them than any other spells you command.
Right. Well, so Shocking Grasp is a level one spell.
Yeah.
And I'm right there with him. Mm-hmm. I just grab him and I whisper in his ear. I mean, this is for Kevin. Which means nothing, but I want it to freak him out. And I Shocking Grasp him. This is for Kevin. I know what you did to Kevin.
Blinded and confused by your strange words, you find it not difficult at all to grasp him, shockingly. And lightning surges through his body. It crackles and burns. The fact his skin is made of stone seems to make it not affect him so much, but it still deals 7 damage.
Yeah. Now, don't applaud. Don't. I fucked up. He's made of stone. If he was made of copper, that would have been a bold move.
Or made of tinder.
Portland, you're better than that. Don't applaud Shock and Grasp on a stone guy. I'm sorry. I let you down. I let your city down.
All right. So Father Tinder, he takes a couple steps back and he starts rubbing his eyes. He starts rubbing his eyes and he can see again for once. He takes his large rocky claws and he lifts them up in the air and you see several spikes made out of white energy coalesce in the sky like icicles and start falling all around the area. So,
oh, God. He's Halle Berry.
In what?
X-Men.
Swordfish.
Oh, Storm. I guess, yeah. I mean, I don't think of Halle Berry as Storm, I guess. It's on me.
Because you saw Swordfish.
No, I didn't.
I know what you're thinking.
I saw
about.
Catwoman. She drinks milk in that. It's sexy.
I haven't seen her in Catwoman.
It's hilarious.
It's terrible.
Her origin story is.
She like works at a makeup factory or something. I don't know. It's
cats
horrendous.
Lick her into being possessed by cats.
What's going on with that Batman show? The Gotham? Like they got the what? So the whole show is just before Batman. Brilliant.
At Comic-Con, they had billboards everywhere for that. And the kerning was kind of off, and so
the kerning just, was off.
No. Trust me, it's going somewhere.
No, I hear you.
In the middle, if you like crossed your eyes a little bit, it just said "Got Ham," and
Got Ham.
And that is a show I would watch.
It all takes place. Is Bruce Wayne in the show? Is he a character?
He's a kid. Like, he's a kid. Like he's a little.
So it's like Smallville before.
Yeah,
Clark
except
Kent.
Clark Kent didn't do anything interesting at all.
All right. And who's the Mooney Fish person?
She's Jada Pinkett Smith. They invented a character.
They made a new character up. She's just a fish person later.
According to comments on those trailers.
Right, good luck, Gotham. What do I know? I just wrote Monster House. Thank you.
What was happening? You guys were getting hit by icicles or something? Halle Berry, right, yeah. So you guys, you can't dodge out of the way. All these 4 spikes are too much, and you take, let's see here. Quark takes 3 damage. Christaberg takes 5, and you 2 take 8.
Okay.
I reject that.
Well, I mean, you still take it.
It's a matter of opinion.
Sharpie, what... I haven't fought many stone creatures. What do you think would defeat a stone creature?
You know, stone hates dynamite. I think that's the kryptonite of stone.
Also,
I mean, we
paper.
All grew up with that phrase, but come on, give me some good advice.
I'm not sure. What? Anybody out there ever fight stone creatures? Paper. I'm hearing a lot of paper, of course. Wait, so... Pickaxes. Yeah.
That's right.
Like a diamond pickaxe would definitely go through this like butter. Earthquakes?
Water.
Anybody?
Water?
Why? Water's good.
Erosion.
I like the idea of like sprinkling
Flogan.
Him with water Flogan. And then freezing it and cracking it.
Well, I have the ability of creating water. It's not my turn, but I'm going to get back around.
Are you speaking as the character or
yes,
are you
I'm
telling me a new thing?
I can create water. I can wash away our trials because and tribulations.
If you created water and then I did Ray of Frost, maybe we could... It's not like Mr. Wizard or anything like I don't know.
Oh, I wish everything was like Mr. Wizard.
All right.
Sorry, Spencer.
Sorry, Seth, because it's his turn.
You know, I kind of want to hear that level one spell so much that I'm going to use my loot of charming and attempt to charm some stuff or things.
Some stuff?
I mean, probably Tinder guy.
It's been so long since you've played your loot of charming. It's quite out of tune, and the sounds you make are rather discordant and not charming. He's not charmed.
Sorry. I rolled a 3. So let's put it at Christaberg's turn.
All right. Since there's a nice hole in his head, I happen to have a climbing kit with 150 feet of rope, so I'm going to use the climbing kit to climb up him using the hole in his head and hold out my hands hoping to use some water and frost.
Oh, I mean, how would you know about that? Just play it cool. Just play it cool.
I
play
just, cool. You know, I know my
We're
teammates
not allowed to
so
metagame.
Well.
We're not, yeah. Yeah,
so good. So I'm
intuitive.
I'm holding on. I'm holding on, waiting. Yeah.
Yeah, so you climb astride the beast with your climbing kit and you you ready your next action for the future. What's up? The baby's turn is right after hers. So
yes.
The baby continues reaching around in the milky white void, and what he finds may disturb you.
Uh-oh.
He pulls out his arm from the white portal with a pop, except he doesn't. Instead of an arm, there is no arm. It's completely melted.
It's okay. Not a vulnerable spot.
It's a hydrochloric acid.
It's like the strongest
container.
Spot on his body.
Well, at least we sent artificial intelligence to check it out.
I'm okay. Just repair me later.
All right, Prospector, robot baby.
Oh, that makes us feel more guilty, R2-D2.
Yeah, stop being so happy.
I love being kicked.
Ah, that baby.
Oh, the milky white spot. We thought it was like, you know, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's super ashamed to have that, and he's like,
no
hit me
no,
here.
It's like, yeah, please, this is
it eats everything.
Gosh,
great.
Damn it. It's like a Breaking Bad when they went through the floor.
Spoilers?
Spoilers?
I can't even think of what part of that
they're
that
still,
was.
They're still laying cable down in Portland. Season 1 of Breaking Bad, spoilers. They're not quite. Yeah, Time Warner hasn't come through yet.
But I like the sensitivity. It means you care about each other. All right.
No,
they like
the golden age of television. They like storytelling. That's what I got from that. You know,
spoilers,
in the wire, the drug dealers win.
With the guy. What? All right. Okay.
Sorry.
I use create water. I for the single clap. I create water. And
all
I
right.
say, as Sestrasha has created life before, I shall create water for your death.
It's like the Cranberries.
So,
H2O. What does it mean about me that I'm very turned on by you doing that impression? All right, yeah, so I create water. I try to create water.
All right, with Christaberg riding atop Father Tinder and holding his head open. You pour your created water directly into his head void.
H2O.
Trickles start to pour out of his mouth and his eyes.
Oh.
Hydrogen.
Too turned on for the stage. All right, yeah, sorry.
That happens. So, Sharpie.
I just leave, and I'm going to go look into some real estate.
You find several great offers.
But I want to check the water pressure on every shower head.
The water pressures are optimal.
Oh, shit. Well, what, I mean, is this a... right. I cast...
There's no heating units.
I cast frozen... shit.
Disney movie Frozen.
Ray of Frost. I cast a DVD of Frozen. She's a role model to women, but when she gets empowered, she has high heels and a slit skirt. I cast Ray of Frost. It's fine also. That's a post-feminist world. You can also be empowered by looking the way
Wait,
you
who,
want
who
in your frozen castle.
About?
Frozen.
Oh, you're talking Frozen. Yeah, yeah.
You know, she goes like, let it go. And she's like, I'm letting it go. I'm like, you're letting it go? Those shoes look really uncomfortable. You made them? But it's that's fine, too. I cast Ray of Frost on the watery, water-filled head wound. This is a Globetrotters move. We all work together. Yeah. This is going to be amazing.
You do those things, and you fire off a Ray of Frost. It hits right in his face crack.
It's called a head.
No, well, he has a crack in his face.
Right.
All right. You hear the crackling of ice freezing over as the void in his head becomes occupied by white ice. So at this point, I think it would be Kristaberg's turn, right? Because you've been holding your action until this happens.
Oh, fuck.
I thought this was what you wanted.
Forget about your nightmare of doing things wrong in front of a group of people.
Well, I've still got arrows for my short bow, so I'm going to attempt to just shove.
Don't say attempt.
I'm gonna fucking shove.
Yes.
An arrow through that ice.
All right.
Crack that fucking rock open.
Awesome.
That's how they do it on Salmon Street.
That's how we roll.
Shoving your fucking arrows into his facial cracks. The arrows pierce through the ice, and you give an expert twist, and the entire rocky head explodes, crumbling into fragments.
Yeah, Portland!
That's awesome!
It's a Northwest paradise. It's the Los Angeles of the upper part of the state of the country. Was that an ending, right?
I mean,
we exploded a guy's head.
His head explodes.
Music.
Yeah,
Thanks for coming to Harmontown. XOXO, Spencer Crittenden, our dungeon master and comptroller, Seth, who I hope can move on to the next chapter of his life without his fucking dumbass friends. McKenna, who, no matter what you do, you will never live on Cooch. My lovely fiance, Erin McGathy, who has taken the bullet of spending the rest of her life with me. And Dustin Marshall, our producer, and Elizabeth, the drink maker, and all of you who stayed, and the ghosts, the murdered, molten steel murdered ghosts of that once occupied this great hall, looking down on us and saying, I helped fight Hitler by making tank parts, and now you're doing hipster conferences here. But I support you, because this is America. Good night, and have a great rest of your festival.
Good night, everybody.